So good morning to all of you. It is a pleasure to be here. The ministers call this pulpit swapalooza, and I am not actually quite sure where Reverend Wayne is in Bull Run. And so we go once or twice a year and visit each other's congregation. So it is lovely to be here. It is good to be in Sterling. And this is my first visit to your church community, and so it's good to see you. We, as probably you know, are kind of your parents, I think. Maybe disaffected parents, I don't know, but that was a long time ago, right? We, this year, you may not know, have been combining our youth groups, and we were delighted to have some of you at our Passover Seder, so all is forgiven, I assume, on all parts. I am a big admirer of both Reverend Anya's and Reverend Wayne, and so I know you have been served well in this congregation. A few months ago, some of you may have been at the Women's March. Did any of you go in January this year? How many of you went last year? And so my dear friend Ruth came to Washington from Charlotte, North Carolina. Ruth and I had worked together in my position as president of CECUS in the 90s. And although we don't see each other often, our friendship is one of those that transcends regular contact, with a knowledge that we are there for each other in the world. And when we do see each other, we pick up as if no time has passed. I hope you have friends like that. So on the Sunday after the march, I came home from worship to an email from Ruth telling me she had been in D.C. and it had been too crowded to connect. She was there with her 16-year-old daughter, and she told me that they were exhilarated and uplifted by the signs, the speeches, and the camaraderie. And she wanted to share with me what had happened on the way home. Her reflections to me actually became a more polished article in the Charlotte Observer, and I wanted to share with you her story and then some of her essay. Ruth and Catherine stayed for the day, and on the end of the afternoon, they started to drive home. They were about 90 minutes south of D.C. when they heard a terrible popping sound. Ruth assumed she had blown a tire, and so she headed to the nearest exit, and then she started to hear screeching and thought, were we driving on metal? She saw a gas station right after the exit, and so she pulled in. Before she could do anything but park her gray Prius, a man from the gas station rushed over. She said he looked like a mechanic in his well-worn overalls, and he said, I heard you coming all the way down the road. He didn't actually say anything after that. He just got right to work. It turned out they indeed had not blown a tire, but a huge piece of plastic underneath the front bumper had come loose, causing the screeching as they went down the road. The man first tried to cut the plastic off, but couldn't, and so he ran over to another car to grab some of those zip ties so that he could secure the pieces in place. He did it all really quickly, and Bruce says, at the time, all she wanted to do was grab the prominent resist sticker off the side of her car. He lay on the ground and he did his miracle with his zip ties, and Ruth asked him whether they would hold for the 4 hours of driving to Charlotte. He said, just ask any redneck like me what you can do with zip ties. Well, zip ties and duct tape. You can solve almost any car problem. You'll be fine getting home. Ruth writes in the Charlotte Observer, the whole interaction lasted 10 minutes, but that good Samaritan, I never learned his name, was a man of his words. Catherine and I made it home safely. She continues, our encounter changed the day for me. While I tried to dive back into my liberal podcast, my mind kept pulling back to the gas station. I couldn't stop thinking about the man who called himself a redneck, the man who had come to our rescue. I don't know his politics, but I had sized him up as a Trump voter, just as he likely drew inferences from my Prius and resist sticker. But for those moments, we were just two people, and the exchange was kindness his and gratitude mine. She says, when my husband and I first moved to Charlotte 8 years ago, I liked to tell people that our neighborhood represented the best of America. In our little two-block Craftsman Home development, we had gay and straight families and people of every political persuasion, from liberal to moderate Republican to Tea Party, and we all got along. We had porch parties in the summertime and a progressive dinner during the holidays. It wasn't perfect, but for the most part it worked. We were a cohesive neighborhood above politics. But this year, she writes, since the election, I realized I retreated from my porch. Ruth ended her email to me in a more raw, uncut form. She said, the experience with the man at the side of the road was humbling. It reminded me that we are all just people trying to get home safely. It made me want to treat the people around me with more kindness and less judgment, with more gratitude. It feels like a sign, Deborah, that maybe if we treat each other with the kindness and gratitude and put our loving selves forward, could this moment be better, or at least more bearable? And she ends, but here is my question for you. How do we hold on to the fire that fuels the urge to resist, to refuse to normalize this horrific time in our nation's history, and still embrace the world with love? Is that possible? Is that why people go to church or gather in faith communities? And then she ended, enough, forgive my long-winded email. I couldn't think of anyone else to send it to. I have been sitting with this email in my heart and in my mind ever since January, thinking about what does it mean to love the world and resist its brutality at the same time, about how we must continue to live by a social ethic based in love and justice, despite the facts, to quote poet Wendell Berry. I'm guessing that many of you have struggled with these kind of questions this year. Has the current administration had an impact on you? How have you adapted to live with the barrage of news that denigrates our neighbors? How has it affected your relationships with the people in your life who voted for the president? Maybe your neighbors, or members of your family, or maybe people sitting right here in this congregation. You probably have heard this expression from one of your ministers. Unitarian Universalists have adopted an expression, origin unknown, love the hell out of the world. Think about it. Love the hell out of the world. Do you know you can even buy that on a bumper sticker or a t-shirt? It's a dramatic statement from our Universalist origins. Our Universalist forebears literally worked to remove the concept of hell from the world. They preached universal salvation. All could be saved. There was no eternal damnation, a dramatic response to John Calvin. There is a quip about the difference between Unitarians and Universalists in the 19th century, which has been ascribed to many of our theologians, so authorship unknown. It says, the Universalists think God is too good to damn them forever. The Unitarians think they are too good to be damned forever. As American Universalism developed, the theology of universal salvation expanded to a commitment to make real our biblical prescriptions. Love the neighbor, your neighbor, love the stranger, love your enemy. Love, inclusion, and injustice became the prevailing Universalist moral ethics. The leader of the Universalist movement, as you probably know, in the early 19th century was the Reverend Hosiah Ballou. And there is a story told about Ballou that underscores his belief in the goodness of people and our ability to love. And here's a version I heard from Reverend Carl Gregg of Frederick, Maryland. He writes, a theologically conservative skeptic is interrogating Ballou's about the way that universalism could lead to the moral corruption of society. So there's the idea that if everyone is saved, if you don't have a hell, what will keep people in line? So according to Carl, this man said, "Brother Ballou, if I were a universalist and feared not the fire of hell, I could hit you over the head, steal your horse and saddle, and ride away, and I'd still get to go to heaven." Hosea Ballou supposedly looked over him and said, "If you were a universalist, the idea to do that would never occur to you." Universalism preaches an ethic of love, an ethic that calls us to love the hell out of the world. In the 19th century, it meant that universalists worked for the abolition of slavery, for suffrage, for health care, and prison reform. In our world, our universalist heritage calls us to address racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, classism, mass incarceration, and police brutality. Our universalist tradition calls us to, in the newly renamed UU Social Justice Organization, side with love. Did you all see the notice that standing on the side of love now has a new name? It is now called Side with Love. From the UU World Magazine report, in June 2017, the UUA General Assembly approved a responsive resolution urging the leaders of the campaign to create a new imagining that better includes and reflects the needs and contributions of disabled people. The word standing as default justice love places a high value on justice work and commitments of only able-bodied people, while it makes invisible and excludes the justice work of people with a wide range of disabilities and autistic people. The Side of Love website explains the need for this organization name change this way. Side with Love is an opportunity to expand and deepen our understandings of the way ableism shows up within the justice and spiritual communities we participate in, create, and cultivate. Jason Shelton reworked the organization's anthem. So as we will sing at the end, it is now called Answering the Call of Love, dropping the word standing from its refrains. Now, I've just looked at you, and this is happened when we talked about this at, in Reston as well. Some of you either grimaced or rolled your eyes a little bit when you heard about these word changes. Isn't this political correctness run amok? Isn't this just semantics? Isn't this so Unitarian Universalist? And I understand that reaction, but I want to challenge you to think about this as a teachable moment. See, disabled Unitarian Universalists organized and challenged our justice campaign because its language hurt them. Have you ever had a fight with a spouse or a dear friend and you say, "It really hurt me when you said this," and they respond to you, "I didn't mean to hurt you." Really? Just in my marriage? Yeah. And what you really want them to not only say, but say because they understand that you have been hurt, you want them to say what? "I'm sorry," right? Some of us in the room are old enough to remember the movie and the book Love Story, where the tagline was, love means never having to say you're sorry. Well, you know, that's not true. Love means not only saying you're sorry, it actually means saying I'm sorry a lot. It means truly being regretful that you have hurt the person you love and then taking responsibilities for making amends and changing your behavior. So when disabled Unitarian Universalists or Jewish Unitarian Universalists or Black and Latinx Unitarian Universalists or any other marginalized groups tells us that our institutionalized religion has hurt them, we need not be defensive. We need to take responsibility. "I'm sorry. What do we need to change to make you feel included?" So the Side of Love campaign is very much about seeking justice for all with love. The authors write, "Side with Love is an invitation and a challenge. It is an opportunity to firmly name what we are for and against, to recognize that as we seek to embody universalism, we commit to resisting oppression, a recognition that in many movements there are two sides, one of love and one of oppression and violence. So daily we are choosing, they say, whether we are siding with love, freedom, liberation, reparations, and integrity, or whether we are siding with the violence of white supremacy, patriarchy, ableism, and heterosexism. The Side of Love campaign asks, when have I sided with love? When have I shirked siding with love? When have I chosen comfort or apathy or despair instead of siding with faith, risk, sacrifice, resistance? To quote a new campaign called Love Army, I don't know if any of you have heard of it, started by American Sikh civil rights activist Valerie Carr, resistance alone will not deliver us. Valerie writes, we will burn out or worse, to start to mirror the forces we are resisting, especially as we enter the 2018 election season. So we are staging a cultural intervention to ground our lives and movements in the ethic of love. She reminds us, quote, that the greatest social movements in history have always been rooted in love as their ethic. She says, through a feminist lens, we see that love is more than a feeling. Love is sweet labor, fierce, bloody, imperfect, life-giving. That means that love can be taught, modeled, and practiced. When we love others, opponents, and ourselves, love can be revolutionary. We believe, she ends, that we can make love a public ethic over the next 25 years by the time the United States becomes a multiracial nation. There was a short story on a meditation I get every day from the UUA called Blessings. And it was the story of a woman, a lesbian, polyamorous, Unitarian Universalist, who had twins with one of her partners. And she talks about how the Monday after the Pulse shooting 2 Junes ago, she took her twins to their weekly karate lesson. And a very straight, very conservative mom rushed over to her in the parking lot with a basket full of muffins and said, this is for you. This lesbian, polyamorous, Unitarian Universalist with the blue hair looked at this straight, conservative mom and said, what is this for? And the woman said, I didn't know what else to do. The moral of that story? In the face of evil, reach out with love. So I hope you will think about, what does it mean to ground our life in an ethic of love? How can we free ourselves from hate, understanding that, in Carr's words, we need to see the ones that hurt us not as monsters, but as people who themselves are wounded, who themselves feel threatened, who don't know what to do with their insecurity but to hurt others. And perhaps if some of us begin to wonder about them, listen to their stories, we will learn that participation in oppression comes at a cost. It cuts them off from their capacity to love. We love our opponents when we tend the wound in them. During the 1990s, when I was the president of the Sex Information and Education Council of the U.S., I spent a lot of my time on cable and network TV debating those who oppose sexuality education and sexual rights. And what I learned in those green rooms before we went on the sets was that the people most vociferous against sexual rights often told me personal histories of sexual exploitation and abuse. I learned then that loving people with different opinions means being in or staying in relationship with people who think differently than we do. Seeking, in St. Francis's words, the opportunity to understand rather than just be understood. Those people may be your neighbors, your coworkers, your family members, or the person who fixes your car. Being grounded in a love ethic means working against hateful politics, but not refusing to see the humanity in others, even when we disagree. It means believing, really believing deep in our hearts, in our first principle, the dignity and inherent worth of all people. And it means, my dear friend Ruth, that you have to go back on the porch in your neighborhood. And it is hard. On the front of your order of service, I gave the words from Michael Servetus, who wrote more than 500 years ago, "It is harder to love than to believe." It is harder to love than to believe. More recently, poet and artist Brian Andreas did a painting that I have a print of in my home office. It says, "Anyone can slay a dragon, but try waking up and loving the world all over again." That's what takes a real hero. So return to my friend Ruth's question and my conclusion. Yes, we can hold on to the fire that leads us to resist, and we can embrace the world with love. In fact, I want to tell you, I don't think we can do one without the other and make it through. And yes, to Ruth's question, being in a faith community that seeks to heal the world, that helps, right? Loving and pursuing justice are not dichotomies. Rather, seeking inclusiveness, equality, and justice is part of how we love and mend and serve the world. My friends, may you be heroes. Let us make it our vision and our story to love the hell out of the world. Amen.